Last week, we began our journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I emphasize that we are learning together because this is not something that I have mastered, and now I'm sharing with you how to achieve it. No, we're journeying together. We're learning together what it means to slow down to a life of joy and satisfaction and fulfillment that God intended for all of us. And what Solomon is doing here in Ecclesiastes is he's giving a retrospective view of how he lived his life. And the summary of all 12 of these chapters is Solomon saying to us, don't be like me. As you look at what I'm writing here, as you hear how I live my life, don't be like me. Don't be so consumed with wealth and pleasure and power that you live your life to exhaustion for the things of this earth that leave you empty and unfulfilled. And we looked at that a little more intently last week in chapter 1, and we saw how that Solomon was frankly tired. He was tired. He was tired of the success without fulfillment. He was tired of the monotony of life that seemed to give him no purpose. He was tired of all the abundance of his hands, but it brought no satisfaction. He was even tired of just being plain out busy. He was tired of the busyness without significance. And all of this was the result of Solomon living his life with an earthly perspective, void of God's gracious purpose and plan, instead of living his life with a heavenly perspective. And the summary of last week's message, which is the 18 verses of chapter 1, is simply this: let us not be too busy doing the wrong things that we are too tired to do the right things. There are many people too tired to be in church today because they've been too busy all week long doing the things of less significance. And so the moral of chapter 1 of Solomon was saying here, we're too tired, we're too tired, we're too tired, I'm just too tired. He was too tired, too busy doing the things that were not very significant, that he was not fresh enough, not rested enough, not focused enough to do the things that were of most important. And when you get into chapter 2, we see a little bit more of how he viewed life. I read these verses. He hated it. His heart was in despair. And that's kind of the theme of the chapter. He was at the brink of collapse. And that's what I want to talk to us about today, avoiding collapse. Look at verse 17 again. He said, therefore, I hated life. I hated it. Look down again at verse 20. Therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair, my heart to despair of all the labor which I took. And then he says in verse 23 that of all his days, they were just sorrows. His travail, his tiredness, his busyness was just filled with grief. What Solomon is saying here is because of how I live my life, because of how I live my life, he faces this moment of collapse physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Solomon was so busy, so focused on earth rather than heaven, that his body and his mind and his soul was all breaking down. I want to ask you a question, and I want you to just meditate for a few moments. Think about these things. What do these words stir up inside of you when you hear them? I'm going to give you some words. And what do they stir up inside of you when you hear them? Words like restore or recover. How about the word recline? When you hear the word recline, what kind of emotions does that stir up within you? Relax, refresh, replenish, renew. What faults build up into your mind? And the truth of the matter is, the way we achieve these things is through rest. We restore, we recover, we renew, we relax, we recline, we replenish, we refresh, we do all these things through rest. And the problem with Solomon is right here in verse 23. We're in the middle way through the verse, he says, yea, his heart taketh not rest. He's not restoring, he's not reclining, he's not relaxing, he's not renewing. In fact, he's collapsing, he's breaking down. Breaking down physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And why is that? Because he's not resting. He's not resting. I think you and I have enough Bible knowledge to understand that when God created the function of life in this world, he designed it to require rest. Rest is not optional. We treat it as optional, but rest is not optional. Rest is obligatory. It's a part of how God created us to function. It's required. It's 6 days of creation. 6 days of creation, and one of those, the seventh day, God specifically set aside as a day of rest. Now, why did he do it? Well, he did it to enforce the Sabbath and to take time to worship. Now, that's a part of it, but who was it doing the rest on the seventh day of the world? It was God. God himself, the all-powerful one, the one who has all strength, set aside himself a day of rest. 6 days of creation, 1 day of rest. Why did he do that? He did it as an example for you, an example for me, to protect us from collapse, because he wanted us to learn from him that in all of our labors and all of our work and all of our busyness, that as God rested, we as well need to rest. And by the way, that's not just a biblical principle. It's been proven medically and biologically that our bodies cannot function properly without rest. It's been said of doctors in this field that one could survive for three times as long without food than one could survive without sleep. It's quite fascinating. CNN did a research not long ago and did a whole study on sleep or die. And in this research, they indicated that a lack of sleep can increase blood pressure, deprive the body of oxygen. It can cause irregular heartbeat. It can make the blood more sticky, all of which can increase the risk of heart disease and stroke. And then it wasn't long ago in 2012 when a 26-year-old Chinese man died after going 11 days without sleep. 11 days without sleep. And the tragedy of it is how he went about to face his death. His doctor said he was in perfectly good health before this deadly decision that he made. He was a big soccer fan, and he committed to stay up and watch every single match during the European Championship. And so he would work during the day because of where he lived in China, over in Europe where the matches were being played. They would be played during the middle of the night. And so he would work all day, and he would come home, and he would stay up all night. And it was his goal as one of the biggest soccer fans to watch every single match. There wasn't a match that would be played that he wouldn't stay up and watch. And so he worked during the day, and he stayed up all night long watching the soccer matches. And when the soccer matches were over, he would go to work, and he did this for 11 days until he died. And his doctor said, and I quote, by staying up through the night and not sleeping enough, his immune system was weakened and it triggered his death. This idea of resting and replenishing and renewing our lives, It's not just a biblical principle. It's proven. It's proven that our lives cannot be lived without proper rest. And that's where we come to the biblical principle of the Sabbath day. For the biblical principle of the Sabbath day exists to teach us the necessity of which God designed for us to emotionally and physically and spiritually find rest. And yes, it exists to honor God and replenish our lives through the Sabbath day of worship, the Lord's day. It's a holy day, but it's not just a holy day filled with worship. God designed it to be a healthy day filled with rest. And so when we come to the principle of the Sabbath, the day in which we set aside on Sunday after the resurrection of the Lord, it was Saturday before the resurrection. And I don't intend to get in all the nuances of the Sabbath day. It wasn't not too long ago in our study of 1 Corinthians that I dealt with the principle of the Sabbath day. That's not my goal this morning. I'm just here to remind us that one of the purposes of the Lord's day, the Sabbath day, Sunday, is to set aside a holy day of worship and a healthy day of rest. And I think that we've kind of confused that Sabbath day principle to focus on what we cannot do on the Lord's day rather than what we should do. And that's no doubt the approach of the Pharisees in the Lord Jesus' life as he was walking and living and teaching. Lord, these guys are selling stuff over here on the Sabbath day. What do you have to say about it? And the focus was wrong. The focus was all about what we couldn't do and how we were breaking Mosaic law. And I think sometimes we've carried over that same principle in our day. Well, should I or should I not iron on the Lord's day? Or should I not cut the grass on the Lord's day? Or should I not go to work on the Lord's day? And so we're so focused on what we shouldn't do that we failed to focus on what we should do. And what we should do is worship and rest. Worship and rest. That's the Sabbath principle. That's why God's given us Sunday, to worship and rest. And that has existed since creation. Since creation. And the reason I emphasize that is some would take the Sabbath principle back to the founding of the law, the Mosaic law, when God came to Moses and said, here's one of the commandments, honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And so automatically we view Sunday, the Sabbath, the Lord's day, as this law-abiding contingency in our life. It started when God gave the Ten Commandments. No, it started before you and I and mankind itself ever existed. And creation is where the principle of the Sabbath began. Why? Because it's not about a law. It's not so much about what you can't do today. It's about the fact that God knew you needed a weekly Sabbath, a weekly day of designated rest and designated worship. One pastor, William Biloxi, said, the Sabbath is God's special gift to man, and one of its chief objectives is to prolong life. The savings bank of human existence is a weekly Sabbath, a day of rest. And what is it that God gives us with the gift of the Sabbath? I don't think I put these in your notes, but I wrote them in mine. Three things that the Sabbath gives us, God's gift of the Sabbath gives us. The first thing it gives us is appropriate rhythm in life. Appropriate rhythm in life. That's why it's important to rest. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. Why? Because God knew we needed that tempo. He knew we needed that rhythm of rest. We go too hard, too long, we collapse. And so what's he do? He institutes the principle of the Sabbath. Work 6 days, rest one. Work 6 days, rest one. Some of you are fortunate enough to work 5 days, rest two. It doesn't matter. It's not a matter of fairness or whatever the case may be. The bottom line is that God says at least one out of every 7 days, you need to set it aside as rest for, because of the rhythm of life. It keeps us going. I wrote down here, it's needed refreshment for the continuing of life. It's needed refreshment for the continuing of life. Spending our Sabbath with family, with church, with things of enjoyment. It's needed refreshment. We need those times where we can just pause and say, this was good before Monday, you know. The needed refreshment. And the third thing I wrote down is that God gave us the gift of the Sabbath for spiritual reverence for God's work in our life. When we're so busy going 6 days strong, getting up at five and leaving for work and getting home at five and then all the other things that we got to do, I dare say that many of us put far more emphasis into the scriptures and our time with God than what we do on Sunday because God knew we needed that. He knew that we needed that Sabbath day, that holy day to set aside from the busyness of work and the busyness of life to come and focus on his word and worship and all that he has for us. And I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, Pastor, what in the world does all of this have to do with Solomon and Ecclesiastes? And again, I note verse 23. His heart taketh no rest in the night. In chapter 1, he was so tired and exhausted and busy that he couldn't find significance in life. Now you get to chapter 2, he's collapsing physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Why? Because he did not value God's gift of rest. My focus today is not necessarily get hung up on the Sabbath day. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to mention very much more about that anymore. I just want us to consider the Sabbath life. A Sabbath life, a life of rest, a life of renewal, a life of relaxing and rejuvenation where we can be who God wants us to be and work the way God wants us to work in the labors that he has given us, yet understanding the importance that there needs to come time where I sleep and there needs to come time when I rest because if I don't, I will collapse not only physically, I will collapse spiritually as we will see here in chapter 2. Because God made us in such a way that we cannot continue a lifestyle of ignoring the principle of the Sabbath and survive. Think about it in these terms. God gave us more than we need. 7 days. Because according to his creation, he only gave us six. That's all we needed. But he gave us more than we need. Now, I know that doesn't compute with some of you who live fast-paced lifestyles. There seems to be never enough hours in the day. There seems to be never enough days in the week. I've got so much to do, I can't fit it all in. No, that's your problem, not God's. That's your problem. It's my problem. Because God says, when I gave you 7 days, I gave you more than you needed. I gave you enough days in a week to get everything done that you should be getting done. And so what he says now, I've given you more than you need. Now you need to give one back to me. You take 6 days and work hard and have labor and do all. But that one day is mine. That one day is mine. It's a day of rest. It's a day of worship. And the bottom line again, as we fall into sync with the theme of this sermon series in our study of Ecclesiastes, is what God's trying to say to us today is you and I need to slow down. We need to slow down and rest in order to avoid collapse. Because this 24/7 nonstop pace of life, it's gonna kill us if we do not respect how God has created us. And that's kind of the whole premise of Ecclesiastes. It's about creating margin in our life to keep us from losing our minds and destroying our bodies and blistering our souls. And I think most of us, naturally, like kids, we fight against the sleep that we need. My kids never want to go to bed. Never. I mean, it is an ongoing struggle, especially with Keegan. Kate has at least gotten to the point where she may ask to stay up longer, but we say, Kate, it's time to go to bed. She'll get in there, and she'll say she's not tired, but once the lights are off and the fan is going and the door is shut, it's like 2 minutes and she's out. Keegan, on the other hand, I have to put him to bed, or excuse me, we have to put him to bed. We have to put him to bed at least a half a dozen times every night. We put him to bed, he gets up. We put him to bed, he gets up. We'll put him to bed at 8 o'clock and we'll be DVRing or catching up on our shows or whatever, and it's 11 o'clock and I'll look at Kathy and I said, you hear that? You hear the pitter-patter going across the... And you walk upstairs and he's like in the closet. One night I woke up, or we went upstairs, he took every tie I had off of my tie rag and it's just sitting there in the closet. Keegan, it's time to go to bed. Well, I'm not tired. I don't want to sleep. And why is that? Because kids are afraid they're going to miss something while they're sleeping, right? They're going to miss something. They're going to miss something. So they fight against it. By the way, some of us are just like my son. I'm one of those guys. I'm afraid if I sleep too much, there's something in the world that's going to happen that I'm going to sleep through and I'm going to miss, right? So why take a nap? I don't want to take a nap. I fight with that. If I take a nap, I'm going to miss something. And I think that's somehow the natural makeup of how many of us do life. We go, 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 go. We don't want to recline. We don't want to nap. We don't want to go off on vacation. Because if we get away, something's going to happen at work, or something's going to happen at home, or something's going to go on while I'm sleeping that I don't have control over. And so we're living our life that way. And guess what? It's killing us. It's killing us. Because we don't want to rest the way that God has required us to rest. It's like in music, there is rest inside the measures, where unless you take those breaks through the process, the notes are not going to make sense. And just as in music, as it is in life. When we live our lives going, going, going without honoring the Sabbath, without taking those rest, those breaths, those breaks, guess what? Life doesn't make sense. We're living it without proper tempo, without proper rhythm. And so let's look in chapter 2, and there's a lot of, as my dad would often say, there's a lot of info in the intro, but let me just give you these points here from chapter 2, and there's only three and not as much to go over here. Number one, you and I are headed for collapse when we pursue ungodly pleasures. According to Solomon's testimony here, you and I are headed for collapse when we pursue ungodly pleasures. Verses 1 through 3 talk about this, because in his continued search for fulfillment in life, this chapter opens up with Solomon in pursuit of pleasures. It's not the life pleasures are restricted for our enjoyment. God wants us to enjoy life. There are pleasures in which are holy and acceptable unto the Lord. The problem was that Solomon was pursuing these pleasures without God. And in verse number 1, he says, I said in my heart, I made up my mind in my heart that I'm going to go now and I'm going to prove thee. Prove what? I'm going to prove life. I'm going to enjoy life. I'm going to find fulfillment in life. And here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it with mirth or with alcohol. And I'm going to enjoy the pleasure that alcohol brings me. And then he says in verse number 2 of laughter, he's referring here to entertainment. He's talking about the access that his life had to all of the sensual pleasures that any man could ever desire. Solomon had it all. Whatever drink you want, he had access to. Whatever woman you could want, he could get. Whatever entertainment you enjoyed, that was right before him. And so here's what he's saying in in verses 1 through 3, all of these pleasures of life I had access to, and I tested them. I tried them out. I proved them. I tested them. I examined to see if they would indeed bring that rest that my life is craving and that fulfillment that my life desires. And here, the two things that he focuses on particularly is that of alcohol and entertainment. And these verses, to me, seem to indicate that Solomon didn't necessarily give himself to drunkenness. He doesn't talk about being drunk here, which is another thing in and of itself. He was still breaking God's law by tasting and experimenting with various forms of wine and alcohol, and he was doing it to see if it brought any pleasure and satisfaction. And he soon would discover that it was artificial, that it was fleeting, that it brought no spiritual rest, that it brought no meaning in life. That's what he meant in verse 2 when he said, "I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it?" Hey, you see all the commercials on television, drink this and you'll get that. Or enjoy this beverage, and all that comes with it is yours. But they don't show you the drunk driving accidents, and they don't show you the abusive homes, and they don't show you the imprisonments that alcohol brings your life. And so that's what Solomon said. Hey, I heard that booze and wine and beer, it was going to make life more enjoyable and my parties more lively. And I tried it and I tested it. But then when the hangover was done, it did me no good. It did me no good. It didn't bring me any purpose. It didn't bring me any joy. And that's the culture you and I live in today. A wine glass or a beer bottle becomes the centerpiece of social activities. And then when it's all done, it leads to an array of sinful activity and moral degradation. And so what Solomon is saying here toward the end of the chapter is that the answer to rest and the meaning of life is not found in alcohol. It's not found in the drinks of this world. You keep drinking it up thinking that this is what's going to make you happy. But he says, now at the end of my life, looking back, I wish I would have never drank a drop of it. It brought me no fulfillment in life. No fulfillment in life. He focuses on alcohol. Now he moves, when he talks about, I said of laughter in verse number 2, he's now talking about entertainment. Of course, not all entertainment amusements are sinful. And that's the point that I'm trying to make to you. But Solomon's problem was that he was looking for entertainment, laughter, to keep the tears of his unsatisfied life away. He was trying to do it without God, hoping that entertainment would remove the pains of how he was living his life. And so that's why he said in verse number 2, I said of laughter, it is mad. It is mad. I sought my life to give to that. David Jeremiah said, laughter only breaks the monotony of crying, and pleasure is only an intermission to pain. And that's what Solomon was trying to relieve. He was trying to use entertainment rather than God to get him through the sorrows of his life. He was trying to find rest and happiness in the pursuit of ungodly pleasures. In which I find it very interesting that in this same reference to mirth and laughter, which is alcohol and entertainment, he mentions it in one of the other books that he wrote in Proverbs chapter 14, as if he's reflecting back to what his life had experienced. Proverbs 14:13, he says, even in laughter, the heart is sorrowful. And the end of that mirth is heaviness. In other words, life lived pursuing pleasures and roads without God will eventually become a life that will collapse under the weight of sinful indulgence. It just makes life more heavy, not more lighter. He was trying to find rest in the wrong things, pursuing ungodly pleasures. And I just need to stop and just say that you are headed for collapse if you continue trying to find rest and satisfaction and fulfillment in this world instead of in Jesus Christ. And so Solomon says, hey, I tried it all. I tested it all. I proved it out. You're talking to a man who's had experience, Solomon says. I drank whatever there was to drink. I fulfilled myself with the entertainment of whatever would bring me laughter. But when it was over, I still had the tears and I still had the heaviness. I had no rest. No rest. You are headed for collapse when you pursue ungodly pleasures. Number two, you and I are headed for collapse if our life is always in motion. You and I are headed for collapse if our life is always in motion. And that's where we pick up in verses 4 all the way down through verse 13. And so Solomon's mindset was that through his work and his achievements, he could find meaning of life. And it is certain that history affirms that Solomon was the most successful man to ever live. So there's no doubt that he gained material profit and prestigious profit from all of his hard work and all of his labor. There's no denying that. And I think the danger to many of us is that we feel that the opposite of an empty life is a full schedule. And that's how Solomon was living his life. Yeah, I don't want to be empty. I don't want to have void in my life. I don't want to live it without being significant. So he grafted this full schedule. I mean, when you read verses 4 all the way down through verse 13, he says, listen, I made me great works, I built houses, I planted vineyards, look at verse 5, I made me gardens and orchards, I planted trees. He's saying, I did all of this. And I'm thinking, when did you have the time to do all of that? But we don't understand. Solomon gave his life to a full schedule. And if we're not careful, we'll live our life the same way. It's like we feel bad if we have a day to sit at home on the couch and do nothing. And we feel bad about that. And we're not taking in to recollection that we've worked our tails off on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And if Saturday rolls around, there's nothing to do. We're sitting there twiddling our thumbs. I feel like, man, I got to do something. I got to keep my hands busy. No, God just wants you to take it easy and binge watch on Netflix for a few hours, all right? Because we feel bad. The opposite of an empty life, we think, is a full schedule. That unless we are doing something, that our life isn't significant and that it isn't meaningful. And it's that same mindset that has us continually searching for roads in life that keep us busy. And we search for that in every area of our life. I mean, how many times do people visit our church and they say, Pastor, we're looking for a church that's always doing something. Well, I mean, we stay busy around here, but a few years ago, we made a decision that we were way too busy. And we had way too much on the calendar. And we had way too many activities to offer. And so as the Lord was working in our hearts, we decided, hey, we're going to slow down. We're going to purge the list a little bit so we can enjoy life. Enjoy life. But what do people think sometimes? Well, I want a church that has something on Monday, a church that has something on Tuesday, I want a church that has this and that going on. That's what we're looking for. And you know why we're looking for that? Because we live our lives that way. We think that unless we're always doing something, that we're not significant. And unless we find a church that's always doing something, it's not a good church. That's what our mindset is. And so we look for opportunities all over the place that allow our kids to play sports at every season of the year. Why? Because if they're not playing soccer and football and basketball and they're on two or three different teams all at the same time, then we're not keeping our kids busy and they're going to be lazy. And we think that way. There's nothing wrong with them playing sports. There's nothing wrong with having a church that has a lot going on. The mindset, however, is that we think life is not significant unless we're always in motion. If I'm not busy, I have no purpose. That's what we think. If I'm not busy, I have no purpose. And that was Solomon. And that mindset led him to eventual collapse. And I know exactly how he feels. because I too, and I'm not victory over this yet, I'm telling you, we're learning this together. I too often feel that unless I'm busy doing something, that I'm wasting this life God has given me. Now what you and I have to learn is the balance. Because Solomon did say, go to the ant, thou sluggard, and learn of his ways that you get lazy. So this message is not an excuse for your teenagers here today to say, all right, pastor said I don't have to get a job. I can play Xbox the rest of my life. I know that's part of the problem with our culture too, is that we're so lazy we don't want to get a job. And we're so lazy that we don't want to get a work. And then we have this generation over here that's so busy, so busy. What we need to do is we have to bridge the gap. We have to understand our role and responsibilities and what God wants us to do and work hard and have good testimony and character while at the same time learning that we have to breathe and refresh and Sabbath and rest. I'll give you 2 points in your notes before we go to the last statement. Solomon attempted to find identity in the busyness of his work. And I'm not going to go back and read all of verses 4 through 10 particularly here. But focus in for just a moment on verse 10, because this is the summary of it. Whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. Why? My heart, look at this. My heart rejoiced in all my labor. He was trying to find his identity in the busyness of his work rather than his identity in his relationship with God. And I think some of us might feel a little convicting at that point. Because the reason we go and do, and work as much as we can work because we try to find identity in the busyness of our work. And in that single moment, it seems like everything's good. Success. Look at how much he's doing. He's building. He's planting. He's growing. He's making. Wow, that's a hard worker. But what you don't see is he gets to the end of his life and he hated life because he was too busy. And his life was always in motion. And he never had rest. He attempted to find identity in the busyness of his work. And when you get to verse number 11, I wrote there in your notes, he was so busy that he became restless and self-absorbed. He was so busy that he became restless and self-absorbed. Verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. There was no profit. He became restless. I don't have time to do it today, but just look at chapter 2 and just count how many times he says, I did this. He was self-absorbed. And I'm sure he was one of those people because he was so focused on what he was doing, he made everybody around him feel bad if they were not as absorbed in the work as he was. We have to be careful about that. Because we expect everybody to live at our pace and to exert the same energy that we exert. And if they're not doing it, then we cast them off as some kind of lazy people. He was self-absorbed. It was all about the way he worked. It was all about what he was doing. And in the end, it made him restless. He wasn't sleeping at night. You know why he wasn't sleeping? Because when it was time to go to bed, he would lay there and think about all he had to do the next day. Is this hitting home with anybody besides myself? How many times a week, not in my lifetime, but how many times a week do I go to bed thinking I got this to do and I got that to do and I'm not? Next thing you know, you set up 2 hours just laying in bed, not watching TV, just thinking about all that you're going to do and how you're going to approach it when you do it.
And that's what Solomon was saying here. At the end of his life, he's collapsing. He's collapsing.
Because he lived his life with his identity and his work always in motion. He was self-absorbed. He was restless. And it's only when you and I find our identity in Jesus Christ and nothing else that we will truly find rest and satisfaction the way God created for us to enjoy. And then let you look at statement number three and I'll be finished. Solomon was facing collapse because he pursued ungodly pleasures and he always lived his life in motion. Number three, you and I are headed for collapse if we keep on pushing our limits. You and I are headed for collapse if we keep on pushing our limits. And that's verses 14 through the remainder of the chapter. Now, I want to make this statement. I want you to listen to me very carefully. Despite what the self-help and motivational speakers of our day tell us, God created us with limits. He created us with limits. Now, we understand that with God, the sky is the limit, right? That with Him, all things are possible. But that's God. God has no limits, not Jonathan. God has no limits, but not Jonathan. Matter of fact, I have limits, and you do too. God created us that way. The body can only go so hard, so long before it shuts down, much like your vehicle can only go so hard, so long without proper maintenance. And isn't it interesting that even with our cars, many of us like to push the limits. The gas light comes on, but let's really see how far we can go before we really need to refuel, you know? You ladies are terrible about this. You're driving down the car, the gas light comes on, your husband gets a phone call. Hey, how many miles I got with this light on? Well, how far are you to a gas station? Well, there are several around. I just want to see how far I can make it with a light on, you know. Stop at the gas station and get some gas. And if we aren't careful, we'll find ourselves stranded on the side of the road, miles from a fuel station, because we've neglected to take careful oversight of our vehicle and we've pridefully pushed the limit. We've pridefully pushed the limit. And so it is with our lives. We fight against our limits. And there may not be this light that triggers in our soul that says it's time to refuel, but your body and your mind and your spirit knows when you're drained. And God is saying it's time to refuel, it's time to pull over. What do? We fight against that. We fight against that. We don't want to accept the fact that God has made us with limits. One of the things that I hated the most when we would purchase buses or buy them is the fact that many of these come with a governor on them, right? Boats are like that too. They come with a governor on them because they don't want to make sure you're driving it over a certain speed. And I remember when my dad was growing up, this is probably not the best thing to do, but when he was buying buses for our church ministry, the very first thing our bus guys would do was take the governor off of them so they would go faster than 45 miles an hour. And again, the mindset is we're not going to let this governor tell us how fast we can take this bus, right? The truth of the matter is we all have a governor. And that governor tells us how fast we can go. It expresses our limits. And boy, do men hate this. We hate it. But at the same time, it proves our point that our flesh likes to push the limits of our true capabilities. How do I avoid collapse? Stop pushing your limits. Stop pushing your limits. Let me give you these two statements there. You see them in your notes. The first one is Solomon pushed his limits and it led to regret and depression. He pushed his limits and it led to regret.
he regretted that he went so hard, so long in his life. He regretted that he didn't rest. He regretted that he didn't take vacations. He regretted that they were running around all over town at every age of their childhood, involving them in every recreational activity that you could come up with. He regretted that. We went too hard. We went too long. We went too strong. We were pushing our limits. And now verse 17, he says, I hated life. And that's where depression kicks in. He was depressed, regretting life, because he didn't take time to rest. And then the next statement, Solomon pushed his limits and he experienced physical and emotional collapse. In verse 18 and 19, he continues to talk about how much he hated labor. He deals a little bit here of the emotional side of it, the mental side of the fact that he was hating his life and all that he did, because now he knew that he was going to die and everything that he worked so hard for was going to be passed down to someone else. And he says in verse 18 and 19, they're not going to look after it the way that I did. And he said, that mindset right there in and of itself is driving me crazy. That I've worked so hard for what I have, and I'm going to give it to whoever. And he doesn't mention a son, or we don't know who he's going to give it to. But he says, it's going to be passed down to somebody. They're not going to take care of it. It's going to go to waste. And that thought drives me crazy, is what he says. And then when you get to verse 20, he says, I went about to cause my heart to despair. He's collapsing. He's collapsing emotionally. He's collapsing physically. Verse 23, all of my days are sorrows, the travail, grief. Why? Because his heart taketh not rest in the night. And I don't know about you today, but I think what Solomon is doing is he's warning me. And I think for some of us, he's warming you as well. He's saying, live your life ignoring how God made you. Live your life ignoring how God made you, busy without rest and pushing your limits, and you will eventually collapse emotionally, physically, mentally, and yes, spiritually. Because all are intertwined together into one human life. You don't collapse physically without it affecting you spiritually. You don't collapse spiritually without it affecting you emotionally. They all work together. And I believe all three of these points that we've looked at from chapter 2 this morning, they point us back to the principle of the Sabbath. We'll pursue godly instead of ungodly pleasures when we recognize the right worship in life and the right rest in life. We'll choose not to live our life in constant motion. We'll take breaks. We'll take vacations. We'll enjoy a Sabbath day of rest when we are focusing on a healthy life and a holy life. And the same is true with pushing our limits. And then in these final verses, verses 24 through 26, Solomon, for the very first time, takes the negative aspects of the retrospective view of his life, because that's all he's done from chapter 1 and verse 1 to chapter 2 and verse 23. It's all been negative. This is what I did. 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 And I hated it. And it was terrible. And now for the first time, before we go into chapter 3, he turns it into a practical life lesson for us. And let me just give you the summary of verse 24 and through 26. It's this: life is empty without God. That's what he's saying. Life is empty without God. And I love verse 26 where it says, for God giveth to a man what is good. And I think that's where collapse becomes a real temptation. Is we don't view what we have as God giving it to us.
We view what we have or what we want as what I must do and what I cannot stop so that I can attain it. And Solomon says, don't be like me. Don't live your life so busy, so in motion, pushing your limits, not resting, not worshiping, not taking your Sabbath and honoring God. Don't live your life like me, because if you do, you're going to get to the end of your life and you're going to collapse. And you're going to look back and you're going to hate all that you lived for. He says, just be faithful and work hard and have good character and let God give you what he desires for you to have. I think it's important that we close with these verses often in our study, as we did last week when Jesus said in Matthew chapter 11, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I love the phrase in which Jesus uses there when he says, take my yoke upon me and learn of me. How do we learn to live a life of slowing down? You can't learn it from me. I don't know that I have anything to show you. But together we can learn it from Jesus. Because when we're heavy laden, when we're overwhelmed, when we're busy, when we're on the verge of collapse, Jesus says, you come unto me and live your life the way that I will teach you how to live it. And there you will find rest. And if you're missing rest in your life, it's because you're not learning from Jesus. You're not learning from Jesus. And so, I leave you with Psalm 127:2 this morning. It is vain for you to rise up early. I wish the verse ended right there. I'll be honest with you, I'm not a morning person. I would love for it to have stopped right there. But it doesn't. He says it's vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he, who's he, God giveth his beloved sleep. Now, that's not like your teenager thinks sleep. It's summer. We're going to sleep for 18 hours a day, you know, all summer long. No, God is saying, I created you for rest. Don't brag about how you only sleep 2 hours a night. You may think you're fine now, but one day you're going to collapse. I had a preacher tell me not too long ago, he said, Jonathan, busyness is not a sign of godliness. Rest. Enjoy the life that God has given you. And slow down.